You're listening to the Staffing and Recruiter Training Podcast, hosted by industry expert, speaker, and sales trainer, Scott Love.
Hi, this is Scott Love, and thanks for listening to another episode of the Staffing and Recruiter Training Podcast. Well, we have a special guest, a good friend of mine, Suzanne Rowan. I haven't known Suzanne more than about 2 years. I read her book, How to Work a Room, years and years ago. And then 2 years ago, I was at a National Speakers Association meeting, a conference on publishing, and met her there and became fast friends. And she's been a great mentor of mine and someone that I respect that's done very, very well in the publishing and speaking world. And her expertise fits squarely in the sweet spot of what we are all about in our business of engaging and influencing other people. If you think about what we do, many of us that recruit on the direct hire side, we're talking to people that don't necessarily want to make a move. So if you put yourself in the path of those people who are not even looking at this and you earn their trust, you have earned the right to talk to them about other opportunities and you can get them to open their mind up. How do you do that? Well, sometimes you've got to physically go to where they are in terms of meetings or even online. And in Suzanne's book, she gives tactical suggestions and solid ideas on how to do just that. We're going to get to her interview here in a little bit. But first, I wanted to share with you some phrases that I think are going to be very helpful for you in turning around the mind of a candidate. You're on a recruiting call. This is the first time you've talked with a stranger. So automatically, we are at a disadvantage. Now, I spoke at the California Staffing Professionals Conference a couple of weeks ago, and I met some very successful people that were in the world of internet marketing and social media, and some of them consult to corporations and their internal recruiting departments and show them how to build a successful social media brand. There's nothing wrong with that. But top performers do not care about their competitors' social media brands. They're too busy succeeding. And that's why internal recruiters in corporate America are limited in their ability to get the very best talent. And most professionals that work in the operations and the line level and the head of organizations, they know it's those people that are not necessarily looking. Those are the ones that typically are the most qualified to do the job because they're ensconced in their companies, and we need to find ways to extricate them out of those organizations. And many times it starts with a conversation. It's what I call interruption marketing. That is exactly what we're doing. In the course of that call, our objective is not to take that person out of their company and to get them to say, absolutely, thank God you called, I've been waiting for your call. It's to get them to open their mind up just a little bit to the idea that there could be something better out there. It's to engage them in a way so that they bring the walls down and slowly they start to trust us. And finally, they agree that yes, maybe it is worth it for them to consider something else. And sometimes that's all you get. And you got to work with it and take it from there. Let me share with you three powerful phrases that I think will help you to do just this, to open up a candidate's mind. Here's the first one. I learned this from my dear friend and one of my closest friends, Jeff Kay. I remember he told me this about 2 years ago. I was sitting in his office and we're just talking about, you know, just verbiage and things like that. If I had something that I knew was substantially better for you, would you at least want to hear about that? So let's say you're talking with a candidate and he's kind of shutting you down. And this is your last effort to get the candidate to open his mind up. Well, Joe, before we go, let me ask you this. If I had something that I knew was substantially better than your current situation, would you at least want me to call you and tell you about that? Well, sure. Well, it's interesting you say that, because I think the opportunity I have right now could be that opportunity. Since I got you on the phone, let's just talk for a few minutes. Here's another one. Whenever I teach people, whether you study my content on recruitervt.com or you're a member of the Placement Club, either way, you know that I get real firm on teaching people a specific model of overcoming objections just because of the massive success that they get with this one technique. When they tell you, I'm happy. You stop the call. You build rapport. You talk about things that have nothing to do with. So how long you been with your company? Where were you before that? Oh, do you know it's so-and-so? Now you're starting to build some familiarity. The walls are coming down, starting to build some rapport. Then you come back to the call. And this is what you can say. Most people I talk to, Joe, they're going to fit in one of three categories. They're either going to retire with their current company, or they're actively looking, or they're kind of in between. Where do you think you'd put yourself in that range? I promise you. Let's make a bet. If you try this and you see results, spend more time on my free website. It's greatrecruitertraining.com. Go to the freebies page. There are 10 free downloads. Did you know that? I've got 10 free downloads on that site. You can spend hours just reading and printing out my blogs. Some search firms all over the world tell me that they structure their weekly training based on my blog post, and I'm honored by that. And that's all free stuff. Number three. This is what you call your classic leading question. And you know, there's nothing wrong with asking leading questions. And most people, they know, oh, this is a leading question. Okay, I'll play a little game. They're just going to be polite. Do you think it's possible, Joe, that there could be something better for you than your current situation? And sometimes if I've got really good rapport, I'll say, Joe, let me ask you this question. I want you to be honest with me. Do you think it's possible that there could be something better for you than your current situation? Do you think that's just a possibility? And if they give you any ounce of an affirmative response, now you have something you can work with and you can take it from there. So let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll have my interview with Susan Rowan.
If you own or manage a recruiting firm, do you ever get tired of training the revolving door of recruiters? Are you disappointed with the performance results of your team? Do you wish your recruiters could finally develop consistent and higher levels of production? Then delegate your training to Scott Love. Through his multi-million-dollar interactive online training platform, he can show your recruiters how to close more deals in less time with higher fees. Visit recruitervt.com for a free demo today.
So I've got with me a good friend, Susan Rowan, who is the author of the book, How to Work a Room. She's an in-demand international keynote speaker who for three decades has shared a message of connection and communication with audiences worldwide. And this is highly relevant for our industry because that's exactly what we're in the business of, connecting and communicating with people. It sold over 1 million copies in 13 countries, as well as The Secrets of Savvy Networking is also a bestseller. Susan's clients include Coca-Cola, the U.S. Air Force, United Health Group, Apple Computer, Procter & Gamble. I could go on and on. Also, her personal favorite, Hershey's Chocolate. Please join me in welcoming my podcast guest, keynote speaker, best-selling author, mingling maven, Susan Rowan. Well, Susan, thanks for joining me today.
It is my pleasure. I love listening to the intro because I want to turn around and go, who's he talking about?
Well, I think what's interesting in the recruiting and staffing business, we're in the business of getting the attention of strangers, talking them into making a move. And many times that's not what's on their mind. So the reason I think you're relevant for our industry is because recruiters are looking for new ideas to get connections with people. And the irony is that face-to-face, as you and I have talked about before, that's the new social network. But people are going to these meetings to engage with prospective candidates and even clients face-to-face. So let's say a recruiter walks into a room. Here they are. How can your expertise help them? What are some ideas you have that can help them to where they're attractive to other people, they can get business cards, they can engage them in conversations? What are some tips that you have to help us get the attention of those people?
Well, the first is, before you even leave your office or house to go, there's some things to do that'll make you more comfortable and more confident. Because even though recruiters are in this business, the research shows 80 to 90% of us self-identify as shy. And that includes some recruiters who much rather go online or go on the phone than do face-to-face. So the first thing is, everywhere you go, before you go there, plan your own self-introduction. Because when you have that customized introduction, which will change depending what association you're at, you know what you'll say about yourself. And the interesting thing, Scott, is when you introduce yourself, the other person will generally respond in kind because they'll just mirror what you did. Then that way you'll have a name, you might have a title, and you will start the conversation. So come with your self-introduction. And by the way, I'm going to sound heretical. It is not an upchucking of an elevator speech. And that's what most people do. Let me give you the hint, and to all of our listeners, it's a 7 to 9 second self-introduction that's really just a personal greeting, it's a socializing situation. But in that 7 to 9 seconds, I want to give everyone the three elements, the Susan Rowan reminders of what to do. The first is what I just said. It's 7 to 9 seconds. It's not 15 or 30 seconds about you and what you're doing. You haven't earned the right to go on about that at that point. It's a pleasantry, 7 to 9 seconds. Second trait, you key it to the event. How you introduce yourself at an industry you're recruiting in at an association banquet may be very different than if you are going to a CEO event board, EO meeting, YPO meeting. All will be different. So make sure that you customize your self-introduction. And the reason why is you give the people you are speaking with context for why you're there. And that helps them talk to you. Because otherwise, like, why should they talk to you? They don't know you. But
So what are some examples? Let's say I'm a recruiter. I work in the engineering space. And I'm going to attend an engineering conference. And I walk into the room. And the first thing I would feel is I'm anxious. I'm feeling some anxiety. Here's a room full of strangers. And my job is to get to meet them. How would you advise somebody to deal with that anxiety? And then how would they actually structure this self-introduction?
Well, here's the self-introduction. Is you could do it two ways. You could say your name first, where you're from. The third tip I was going to give you is our friend Patricia Fripp said, don't give your title, give the benefit of what you do. This is especially important for recruiters because you could give the benefit is something like, I help people get to the job they really want from the job they may currently have and still like. You know, you can play with that a little so that you get their attention without necessarily the formal title. Give the benefit of what you do that benefits them. Mm-hmm. And that's mm-hmm. one way to do it. But when you are prepared, you feel much less anxious. A lot of people mm-hmm. wonder, what am I going to do? Well, here, you know, in this day and age, go to the website. See who's on the website. Do a little sleuthing, which we all call Googling now, so that when you walk into any room, you're a little more familiar. You've already gone to LinkedIn, most likely, so you know who might be candidates for the person that's looking for a new VP of marketing for an engineering firm. So you should be walking in already much more confident and prepared because you've done your work. But now I'm going to give you the part that engineers might not even know. You might have to learn a little of their lingo and a few of their communication issues. That's why reading their website is good because you'll see what's going on in their industry. And it doesn't hurt to have, and this is going to sound so old school, read a paper. Read the engineering magazine. Find out what the issues are that they're interested in. I'm all about making sure this is where USA Today is great, making sure you know what's going on nationally. Even the sports scores are important. I had a client who said he read the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, and USA Today, and then he confided in me. I have clients all over the country. I read it for the sports scores. What do people talk about? Do they launch right into, I think you'd be perfect for the job? Uh-uh. Someone's got a beer in one hand and an hors d'oeuvre in another. That's not the time. This is the time for the getting to know you conversation. Engineers may not be great at the small talk, but if you find that one element they're interested in, that might start a conversation. I spoke for a group of engineers, and I found a number of them wore Jerry Garcia ties because they were all deadheads. I mean, really? You know, so be observant. Look at what they're wearing. Do they have a special pin from an honor society? Is there something on their name tag that would give you conversation? But if you read the paper and you know what's going on in the industry and in the world and in the local community that you're standing in, you know, you will have the leg up. I know a lot of people say, I'm too busy to read the paper. I had a client do that in a speech. He was an executive VP. I'm really too busy to read the paper. But Susan, what can I do? I can't make conversation. I looked at him and I wanted to say, really? Did you just hear what came out of your mouth? No. If you read the websites, if you read their magazines, if you see what their newsletters are, have some concept of what's going on in the world. A little small talk isn't a bad thing, even if it's do you recommend the wine or the beer, whatever? It's what you have in common at the moment.
That's interesting. And it's interesting when you think of a sales scenario. Our job is to get people to trust us. Well, how do we get them to trust us? We have to find something we have in common with and build that rapport. The walls come down. There's a way you can do it over the telephone, but in a networking group like this, the walls are already down because you're there. And we don't have to talk about our product or our service or our offering. We have to get to know them. We get to know them, we collect a card. Then when we call them, we have an open door in many ways.
And that's exactly it. And I'm going to give all of our listeners something that someone said to me who, when I was doing an interview for NPR, called in older gentleman. He said, grew up on a farm, but when they went to town for the dance, how they met people is they had a saying, the roof is the introduction. When you're already in the same room, you have something in common. It may be how long it took you to get there, find a parking space, the traffic, but it's also the purpose.
Interesting.
You have something in common. And, you know, it doesn't matter. As soon as you find out you have something in common, it might be, I was just emailing with a friend who put something up about the Stanford band and the Cal band. Well, we've been going back and forth. Who knew? He didn't know I went to Illinois, which was the first marching band invited to play at a halftime at a football game 1,000 years ago. But that's, now there's this connection. You never know. And this is another phrase I'm going to underscore. Mm-hmm. You never know. So really, even as we want to be focused and targeted, I think the whole thing is in every room, have your antenna up, because you never know who you're talking to, who they know, who they can link you to, and they go, oh, you're looking for someone for that. No, I'm fine, but you know, I went to, got my master's with a woman who would be perfect. Keep your antenna up, because you never know it. And I know this is going to sound old school, but you want to create a reputation face-to-face that works for you, so we have to be nice to everyone.
Yeah, that's true. Even when we don't feel like it, right?
Oh, especially if we don't feel like it. I tell people that I have a whole side of me called the perfunctorily polite side. For those I don't like. But our idea is you want people to know you so that when you do call, they take the call or they return it within an hour.
Right.
And the more pleasant the interaction is. And so how about if I say this? When you're talking to people, have a smile on your face. Every time, I've been doing this for 3 decades. Every time I have my audiences get up, and then I say to them, okay, what made it okay to go over to that person? Always, they were smiling. So don't just worry about approaching people. Be approachable. And that smile will open up possible doors and windows.
So simple. Isn't it so simple?
Well, it's not so simple. And luckily, it seems like it's simple. But I laugh and I say to people, thank goodness the world wasn't raised by my mother or I wouldn't have sold 1 million books.
So how do you think we can get better at networking with other people? What are some tips that you have that can help us to become better at that?
Okay, I'm going to differentiate between the ability to work a room and network. You will get better at it the more often you do it. It's like, how do you get to Carnegie Hall? Practice, practice, practice. So every time you're invited, look at your calendar, RSVP, and then I'm going to give the, okay, Roanne's coming down from the clouds and saying this. RSVP and then show up. You'd be so surprised how many events, association events, there will be a third to a half of the name cards there because people haven't showed up. If you want to develop a reputation in the industry of someone with follow-up, you absolutely show up where you say you're going to show up. Because people want to know that they can trust you as the person that they're going to put their careers in your hand.
I agree. I think that a lot of it's developing that reputation, like you mentioned, and being aware that every interaction you have impacts how people think of you. And that I've always found that bad news travels faster than good news.
Oh.
If, you know,
They've done research on that. If people have a bad experience, I think if the numbers is like they'll tell 10 people. If they have a good experience, they'll tell 3.
Yeah. So how can I get information from someone? Let's say I'm a recruiter. I'm meeting someone here at an association cocktail party, and we're having our meeting that's starting later today or something like that, or tomorrow. Yeah. When is the right time that you think it's acceptable for me to ask them questions that other people might find intrusive, but I want to know, are they open to other things? Are they open to other opportunities? When do you think would be the right time to really pinpoint and start doing an exploratory dive into what motivates them?
You know, I don't think there is any one time. I think it's a case-by-case study. When you're talking to someone and they are animatedly talking about something, this is not the time. I'm sorry, recruiters, this isn't the time for your agenda. When you walk in the room and you have an agenda and you deep dive, because that's what you came here for, I'm going to tell you, you are going to be diving off that board into no water in the pool. You really, it's a case-by-case study. You can get the feel of it. Watch their faces. See if they're doing anything that indicates they're a little ready to move to the next topic. But here's one way you can do this. If you go too soon, it will seem very inappropriate, and you might lose the contact. But what you can do is inject a little phrase or question within a sentence to see if they bite.
Interesting. Okay, so like, what would be an example of that, do you think?
Okay, you might say, you know, I see her at so-and-so. You know, I had someone I know that found someone there that was so happy to leave and go wherever and then come back to the subject. I'm just making this stuff up. But
right.
it's in the middle of a sentence so that you can tell if they pick that up. You can watch their face and then just see how that settles with them. And you might say, oh, maybe you know of the person. You know, I think what we do is we really overthink everything we're going to say, and people are more forgiving, but they don't forgive if we've made them feel backed into a corner. So here's my thought. We can do things conversationally, and if it feels conversational, like I hope this interview does, people will be more open. If it feels like we're asking questions because we have to do a deep dive because we don't want to waste our time with this person, let me tell you, they will back off, and they might tell a couple other people to back off from you.
I've noticed that in some spaces, when you're a recruiter and people know it, they don't want to be seen with you if they know everybody knows that you do recruiting, because, well, I might be thinking that, you know, they think I'm looking, but I don't want them to. I've noticed that also. I remember the first time I started getting involved in associations in my old niche was construction. I spoke at a conference. It was actually like an after-dinner thing. And I noticed that there were two recruiters that were competitors of mine with the same firm sitting at the exact same table in you know, right next to each other. So they cut the odds of meeting somebody in half. And that was interesting. And so that gave me some ideas. When you go, you want to get to meet as many people as possible. But when you're having the dinner, you're really going to get to know maybe two people that evening pretty well because you're sitting down.
I'm going to give you the hint. Okay, now
what's
I'm going to transform you. I learned this from Carl Lamel, the CEO of Clearbrook, an association in Chicago. He told me this years ago, and here's what each one of you listening is now going to do, and it's going to be a gift to everyone at your table. You will be the unofficial Susan Rowan appointed table host. Here's what happens. We go sit down at the dinner, and all of a sudden we're talking to the person to the right or the left, and hope they're not talking to the person to the right or left, or we're talking to no one but our salads. So what you do is big smile on your face, get everyone's attention. You can clink a glass and say, I'd love to meet all of you. Why don't we go around the table and take 30 seconds to introduce ourselves? Because believe me, nobody wants to sit there and feel constrained, and everyone wants to meet everyone at the table. But if you say, I'll start, prepare that 15-30 second, now this is different than a pleasantry, a little bit about you, and then point to the person on your right and, you know, take it away and you're next. And then you have to also become kind of the monitor. But if everyone has a chance to say their name, what they're doing there, they so appreciate that you've done something, like you've given them an opportunity to shine.
That's great.
And so you are now the unofficial Susan Rowan appointed THs, table hosts. And I say this lightly, but I'm going to tell you, I have done this so many times. And people appreciate it because they really came there to meet everyone, not two people.
So what's the downside of doing that? What's your worst experience in being the table host?
Oh, if people have sidebar conversations. Because my worst experience is I'm a former sixth grade teacher. I wanted to put them in the corner. What do you mean you're talking with it? So you have to be very diplomatic. And if people, it's so-and-so's turn. You know, make sure that the spotlight is on everyone. And you could say, I know this is going to be hard to do, but we, as you set it up, we're going to give everyone that 30-second spotlights, and then we can have our side conversations later. But that's been the worst for me, is like people were having conversations, and I thought to myself, they must have a hearing problem because they weren't even whispering. They were so loud. And then like I used to, as a teacher, be able to punish them, but then I couldn't because, you know, it wasn't the right place. It was awful.
That's right.
Sometimes it might not always work, and maybe you'll only get halfway around the table. But you know what? The people that were talking while other people were introducing themselves, they are setting themselves up to be looked at disdainfully because they haven't been polite. And I know this is going to sound strange, but face-to-face, we still must be polite, civil, attentive, charming. And when those people aren't, and hopefully that'll be one of your competitors, people aren't going to necessarily want to do business with them because they will have felt that they didn't participate in an appropriate way.
Yeah, they broke the rule. They didn't follow the game. They didn't follow that. It's interesting. My little girl is 4, and
adorable.
One of the mantras. That's right. Thank you.
And
one of our mantras in our house is, whenever you're afraid of something, that's why you should do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, teaching her that action dissipates fear. When she was at the playground about 2 weeks ago, there's another little girl that was saying, I'm afraid. There's a slide that she's afraid of. My little girl, I heard her say, that's exactly why you should do it.
Oh, it's
and I was really proud of her. and she's a brave soul. And so the same thing with this. If people are afraid of doing this, this gives me the nervous willies. I'm thinking, if I'm at the next conference, I'm going to do this. I'm going to be the table host. I've never done anything like that before. For me, as a very conservative Episcopalian that doesn't get too excited about anything, you know, I don't want to invade, I don't want to intrude, but I definitely want to get those cards, and I definitely want to build those relationships. But I would be willing to bet this is pretty fun. This is a pretty fun thing to do. When you're meeting people like this, you are the, I don't want to say the center of attention, but you're the table captain. I mean, you're the
exactly.
one that's...
Exactly. And then they all get to know you, and then... You can facilitate card exchange. You can, and then once you all have each other cards, now here there will, oh, this happened at one time. Someone was sitting at the table, and before anyone, you know, the first person got the word out of the mouth, started throwing out cards. This is not the time to do it. It's a card exchange, not dealing keno. And that's what people need to understand. You want people to have your card and not toss it out, but want to keep it. But the other part is you want to get their cards as well. But you said something that really triggered something for me, and that is, you know, people are nervous. Please remember, according to research, 80 to 90% of us, research on shyness, self-identify as shy. So even though you're the recruiter and you're walking into the group of engineers or construction workers or realtors or chief information officers, remember, 80 to 90% of them are going to be uncomfortable. So whatever you can do to make them comfortable will be so appreciated. And here's the other thing it does. It takes the onus off of you. Then you don't think of, oh, my God, what am I going to do? But if you say, what can I do to make them comfortable with me? That's exactly what we all want, to have people comfortable
right.
with us.
Absolutely right. Well, Susan, I can't wait to get your book. I can't wait to get it and read it because I'm excited about the things that you're sharing with me. And already I've learned several good tips that I'm really going to implement. And I'm really excited about that. If somebody wants to reach out to you, maybe have you come and speak at their conference meeting or their company's meeting, how can they find you? What are some ways that they can reach out to you?
Well, of course, there's the usual, Susan Roane, SusanRoane.com, with my phone number and email and everything but how much I weigh, which I will never put on the internet. God forbid it gets, you know, hacked. But here's another thing you could do. Get paper and pencil. 415-461-3915. If you have someone that wants to hire me, great. But if our interview generates a question that you have that's burning and making you think you have heartburn, call me and we'll come up with a solution. I learned that from the fourth grade teacher who taught next door to me.
That's great.
Yeah, and you know what? It's what you said. And I want to go back to this. How Scott and I met. I spoke at a conference that Scott RSVP'd to and showed up, and we had a little conversation and a real nice connection, and we stayed in touch. It's now, is it 2 years or 3 years?
About 2 years.
It's about 2 years. So I think it's Scott was interested in this, came to the conference, heard me speak, thought I was fabulous and funny. So I guess I have to say that about myself. But it was our sidebar conversation in the hallway. And that's why you show up at things. It may not be the formal situation, but it might be the offhand impromptu conversation in the hallway that will get you the name of the person that you can recruit for the client that you have.
You're absolutely right. Well, Susan, thank you very much for being a guest on our podcast, and I'm sure we'll be talking again real soon.
Thank you. It's been fun.
Thanks for listening to this episode. We'll catch you next time. Make sure you check out all the free tools and free downloads on my website, greatrecruitertraining.com. Go to the freebies page, where there's 10 free tools that can help you build more. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.